And it's time for our technology segment with Morris Misilowski. Morris is a business futurist, and you can find him at businessfuturist.com. Morris, welcome.
Hello, good to be here as always.
Well, thank you for joining us in our studios again, and let me introduce you to Clement Palligaru.
Hello.
Hello, Morris. Good to have you here.
And you. Nice to meet you.
It'll be fun, I think, in the next coming weeks when we're all chatting, we're all on board. And technology is one of our favourite subjects.
Well, it hasn't been fun before.
It has always been fun, Morris. Okay, I take that back. You're giving me a hard time.
That's my job, isn't it?
Today. It is. Well, actually, no, it's not your job. I'm supposed to give you a hard time.
Okay. Then give me a hard time. Come on.
Okay, I will. Were you one of many Australians who went out and got the new iPad, only to find that it wasn't compatible with Australia's 4G network?
No, this time I wasn't. Isn't that strange? No, I didn't. You're right. It was an interesting thought. I'm actually amazed how many people didn't know that it wasn't 4G compatible, because it was well talked about on its introduction into Australia. What simply it meant was that the Americans, as always, only see America as being the entire world. And the 4G component they put in it, which is hardwired, it's actually a chip inside of it, is a 4G chip that works perfectly well within the 51 contiguous states of America. Anywhere beyond that, who cares? And Australia's in the who care basket.
But nobody at Apple in Australia bothered to check?
Nobody in Australia, we'll get hounded for this. Nobody in Australia in Apple, I don't think, had the authority to check or to say anything about it. Oh. It's generally how I'm being facetious, you know that. But the reality is, it was designed in America for Americans, and the rest of the world is lucky enough to have what we were given. Now, I think they'll rectify that. They will eventually come up with a workaround. It might be software, although I think that's difficult because it's a chip, and I would be absolutely sure that the next piece of Apple equipment we see will not have the same fault. But it does have that fault, and it was well known from day one. It wasn't a surprise.
So when you're talking about a fault, I'm curious because what I understand is it's got 4G capability, and Australia's not there, not quite there
Australia
yet.
Australia has 4G capability. It has it through one of our telcos, and the problem is the band that it's presented on. So really, it's like a channel.
Ah.
And the channel that's being used in the States is not available to us in Australia, and it's quite simply because it's being used now by analog television.
Right.
The band that it transmits on is actually the one that we see free-to-air television on.
But analog television is going to come to an end
exactly.
shortly.
But it's about 2-3 years down the track until right. it totally is switched off. At that point, they'll have an auction for those bands. And at that point, it's highly likely it'll go into 4G land. Although I think by that stage, 4G will be kind of old hat. We're talking two or three years down the track.
Yeah.
So it will be bought up and it will be used for telecommunications. Absolutely. That was its intent for why it was being freed up. But at this stage, we physically can't allow that bandwidth to be used for 4G, because otherwise we can't watch our free-to-air television.
It might be a bit old hat as well with that thinking that, you know, this is all for America and the rest of the world can just follow or shut up, because now they've got a class action possibly
yes.
on their hands.
Yes, I mean, I absolutely agree with you, and I assume that either my or your email will now blow up from people contacting us from various fruit manufacturers. But having said that, absolutely. But it is the myopic view that they had. It amazes me, and I agree with you, it astounds me that nobody thought about anywhere else in the world. But having worked and lived in America and done some consulting into there, it tends to be a myopic view of the world. I think it tells us a lot about our culture too, and that's a different conversation for a different day, but it's the cultural mind shift.
I just think it's given us a fantastic insight into the people who queue up and get out there first to grab these new technologies, because if I were to do that, I'd really research it, but it's kind of revealed that some people just don't really do their homework.
Well, they don't, and again, there would be a great percentage of people that just had to have it. It's a trophy buy. You know, you have to be the first to have it, you want it in your kit, and you're going to buy it regardless. There are many, many, many great features in the new iPad, so we shouldn't just say that it's four, and because we can't have it, it's useless in Australia. Mm. It has a beautiful screen on it, its resolution is incredible, it works very fast, it is exactly as it says, except for that one feature in Australia. You know, the reality is, I think, that many people in Australia, even if it had 4G capability, wouldn't be able to use it. Mm. There are only a narrow group of people that have that one telco's 4G card at this stage, and that will grow over the next months to years, absolutely. But at this stage, it wasn't absolutely usable by a lot of people. Mm. We're right to be upset by it, but it was known, as I said. It wasn't as if it was found out afterwards. You know, buyer beware, unfortunately, and I go back to your point, Clem, which is a great one, it talks back to the culture. Yeah. The culture of the people inventing it and marketing it, because at some stage in the process you think somebody would have checked up, is 4G the same across the planet? Yeah. This is a very, very clever telco company. I mean, you cannot take anything away from them being clever. This was not clever.
Anyway, I thought this would have been discussed at least in the forums, and people would have done a little bit of internet search and just to find out whether it was compatible.
You would think so.
You didn't see any of that.
You didn't, but most people would have assumed quite rightly 4G is 4G is 4G, and Apple is an Apple is an Apple. If it says it works, it works. I mean, who am I to go and check out the bandwidth for it?
Not quite the full-shaped Apple this time.
No.
You, of course, are one of those who never gets caught out, and you always do your research. And you are a technology and business futurist. You've seen a couple of things in your crystal ball. These are the ways in which things are going to run. This is going to be the way of life in the future, as you see it. Invisible army tanks and trucks is one of those things. This could change war, basically. Is it true? I mean, army tanks and trucks are pretty difficult to hide.
The answer is it is true, and we've seen in experiments, we've seen prototypes, and we've seen it work. You know, my reality before starting this segment is, gee whiz, I hope we never have to have anything that has anything to do with war. So I'd love to make them totally invisible and get rid of them. But having said that, you know, my view isn't going to stand for much. We unfortunately have them on our planet. And yes, what's happened is that a group of Swedish scientists have come up with a method to make the tank disappear. Now, what that means simply is this. The physical tank doesn't disappear. It stays where it is and it never goes anywhere except for where you drive it. What they've found out is that 90% of all army tanks, all army trucks and ordnances are now viewed through infrared. They're viewed either on satellite or through a set of binoculars which are tuned for a particular frequency looking for hot and cold. So what they've done is they've masked the signal of hot and cold of that vehicle so that when it's picked up on one of those infrared devices, it appears not to be there, or even more cleverly, it appears to be something else. So they can make it look like, and there's a great YouTube video, have a look for it, that turns a tank into a polar bear. So obviously it's a tank where it is, but when you look at it on the screen or through the set of binoculars, you actually think you're looking at a polar bear walking around.
That's amazing. So I thought this was going to be like Harry Potter putting over that cloak.
Well, that's the thing, the cloak thing.
And poof, you can see right through it. You don't even, that's right. Unless that person bumps over some furniture, then that's a giveaway.
Well, it's interesting because in the past, technology developed for use in wartime has transferred onto, you know, the average person using them. There's been lots of things, lots of examples. With something like this, I mean, could it? There's got to be some use in the future.
Well, Mercedes-Benz has actually come up with a use, which I don't understand, but it's there. And they have released a prototype, a car, which has this same technology attached to it. So the car, and this is a prototype, and prototypes are meant to do exactly that. They're meant to be provocative, make people talk about the brand, and we are, so it's obviously working. So I don't know
there's no reason why Mercedes-Benz would like to be a polar bear.
Well, not a polar bear. I don't know why Mercedes-Benz would want to be invisible. I mean, they spend a lot of money making sure they're absolutely visible to everybody. But
some political leaders someday, maybe some government leaders, maybe someone important, you know, who may be there'd be surveillance on this person, could use the car.
So it may well be. At this stage, it's still stuck on technology. It's still stuck on things that we build, and that's because what it requires is a different skin on it. Yeah. This is a particular skin that they've built on it. It apparently is very much like an alligator skin, not in feel, but in texture. In other words, made up of little tiles that wrap the whole thing in, and each one of those tiles can be manipulated, so it comes up with a different visual image for whatever that thing is meant to be.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that we will find a purpose for it down the track. What it is, who knows, and will we be able to see it?
Well, that'll be another interesting question, but how far into the future is this?
Well, this tank's ready to roll now. So the technology's there, and we're talking, well, the American government, the Swedish government, others are talking about rolling this out right now. So expect to see it over the next 5 years, certainly in the next iteration of tanks, whatever that commercial order goes through.
Yeah.
I assume this will be on some of them.
So in a brochure, in the post box, very soon.
Yeah, and not just on tanks. Where it's being used at the moment is on aeroplanes as well. So the drones and things that are flying into skies, you know, all those wonderful James Bond spy missions that we like to think about that are not happening, but of course may be out there.
Yeah.
This technology is on those planes as well. And to me, that makes not a lot more sense, but that makes it a lot more usable. I mean, that's primarily where I think they will end up using it.
Yeah, and again, you know, it makes you think about the countries who use a certain sort of surveillance on these types of things. So you can go and do a survey and then just see who's going to be hit hardest, because then these countries would need to then develop technologies to get over this. Yeah.
Can you imagine that the technology to develop to get over this might be a window?
Yeah, wow.
I mean, just look out a window and see what you can see. Because it's not a polar bear out there, it's a tank.
That is true. It's a really interesting move indeed. But you were on the topic of cars, and the future of cars is that you might find driverless cars not too far from the future from now. I mean, they already reversed themselves. Mm. What do you mean by driverless cars?
Driverless cars is totally driverless. You can sit in the back and the car will chauffeur you to wherever you want to go. The point you made is terrific, Adeline. It's only 5 years since most of us have had GPS in the car. Mm. In other words, the car somehow tells us where we need to be and which direction we're heading. That's only 5 years. But yet many, many people now consider it to be an ordinary part of a motor vehicle. We have cars that now you can purchase, as you've said, that reverse themselves. There are lots of elements of this already in our motor vehicles in the last 5 years, and a number of car manufacturers, and strangely enough, Google, that wonderful search engine Google, has put a lot of money, time and effort into building what seems to be the best example of a driverless car. They have a car that's driving around their area in California. It's done about 350,000 kilometers in the last year and a half, and all of those are driverless. What it does is it's an ordinary car to all intents and purposes. It has a whole lot of cameras on it at this stage. Remember, we're talking prototype, we're not talking finished product. It has a whole lot of cameras on around its perimeter, and it also has a radar on top on the hood of it. And it literally tracks where it's headed, what's around it, and makes split-second decisions. I've seen video of it. I haven't seen the car itself. I've seen video of it. And when it pulls in, because one of the most difficult things we do is merge into a highway, for instance, or a freeway, when we have to come in from a lane and there are three or four other lanes that are moving very, very fast, we've got to make the decision of when to go in and what's appropriate and what speed.
Yeah.
I've seen it do that, and it does it really, really comfortably. It actually looks at all of the cars around.
What about traffic lights?
It monitors all of that. It can recognize traffic cars. It recognizes debris falling onto roads. It has been put through its paces, and it seems to be working really well. They take it up to 150K on the highway, and it drives by itself. It can recognize people jumping in front of it, all sorts of things happening. And I think this is where we are headed down the track, not too long, 5-10 years from now.
So, Morris, when do you think the second-hand ones will come on the market?
about 10 years. But
that's what I'll look into.
What's interesting around these driverless cars is that it apparently, we believe, will cause less accidents.
Yes.
Because it will know far in advance and be able to make better split-second decisions than we will. What we need to say to this, of course, is that driverless cars are like a plane. You know, you will be able to take them over and drive them in a manual condition. I should have put that in when we started. It's not as if you won't have any control over it. Mm. So you'll choose autopilot or not.
Mm.
But having said that, in autopilot, it will actually be able to make quicker decisions than we will. And where we're headed with this is a number of people are working on what are called motor road trains, that a car will actually recognize a car in front of it, will pull up behind it, and will keep a distance that's safe. Both cars will lock together, not in a physical sense, but in a virtual sense, and they will form one continuous line down the freeway until a car has to depart. What that does is fuel economy like we haven't seen before. The drag coefficient behind it, the ability for people to drive, the ability for us to need less roads possibly also, because we're able to put cars closer together far more safely. So there are a whole lot of implications beyond just the not having to drive a car when we start to talk about driverless cars. Well, you won't either, because what it does is it monitors. This Google car does that. It monitors a car space. It actually looks out with all of its cameras to find a car spot that's available and then drive to that car spot and park accordingly. Speed tickets, again, it knows all of the road laws. And look up the Google YouTube, great use of Google and YouTube for this, and have a look at how it's working. It's quite incredible for how it does. I've actually driven in the back seat of a prototype of this in Japan. And after the first couple of minutes, are kind of like, you know, nail biting, because, you know, there's a car driving and you're not it. After that, it's actually quite a nice sensation. It really feels very comfortable.
It's very James Bond, isn't it?
It is very.
How did you... Well, James Bond, and there was Kit, of course.
Kit.
But how... I mean, of course, their voice activation was used. How did you tell the car you were driving in Japan where to go?
I didn't. The people who manufactured actually a Toyota experiment.
Yes.
And in their case, it was a track. So the track defined where the car went.
Yeah.
So there were monitors put on the track and there were people monitoring the car.
Yeah.
So it was quite robotic. It was almost kit-like, you know, with the car and that kind of thing, with joysticks of being used. What I experienced was very rudimentary and very prototypey.
Sure.
This new Google one, and whatever it becomes, because we're talking about Google, but all of the car manufacturers, all of them, have some sort of work around this area.
Mm.
Their work is far more sophisticated than that. So I do believe it's something that we would welcome, we as drivers. I think down the track when we got used to it, because we do
except
like
the rev heads. The rev heads like to be in control.
But that's manual. And again, you go yes. back to that.
Sure.
So we talk about technology all the time is in the hands of people. And I never ever want to get to a state where technology says I have to be used. It should always be an option, and it should be the option that we use when it's best to use it. And when it's not, we don't.
Mm.
There are times when a plane is better flown by a robot, much better flown, and there are times when I don't want a robot anywhere near it. Give me the hands of somebody who's skilled and crafted at landing this thing and give it to him or to her to do. And the same with all of these things. Technology in its place is a wonderful thing. When it's abused and not used properly, it just shouldn't even be there.
We're running out of time, but we have to finish that one. If you're just simply tired of the idea of cars driving on the roads, why not have flying cars, which is another
yes.
thing that you have been looking at, flying cars.
Now, flying cars have been talked about again for a very long time. If you're as old as me, you remember the Jetsons, the old cartoon series,
sure.
and he always went to work in an aeroplane or in a car that he drove. It's one of the things I'm asked about at every conference, every presentation I give. It's actually now becoming commercially available. There is a car they claim that is going to start to be sold at this year's New York Auto Show. So in about 2 months' time is when the auto
wow.
show is, and they claim they're taking the first model of it to that show. What
oh,
it looks
wow.
like, what it looks like is a Learjet, you know, the old-fashioned little Learjet, a couple of
yeah.
a couple of seats in there,
yeah.
and then the wings concertina, so they fold in. On top of the car.
Right.
And then the car drives.
This is
drives.
James Bond stuff.
It is James Bond stuff. So what we're looking at is a car that will be able to drive and fly.
Yeah.
And it'll be able to come in and out of airports, and then, of course, once it's landed, be able to drive itself to wherever you want it to
and the
go.
The wheels come in and the wings fold out.
Yep.
And, I never thought this would happen in my lifetime. I really did. After watching Blade Runner,
yeah.
I've been waiting.
Now, the answer is keep waiting. Because this is a great experiment. This is definitely some people will buy. The problem we have, and these types of things have actually been invented for the last 30 years or so,
mm.
the problem is that we are not allowed to fly them in commercial flight space.
Mm-hmm.
You can't take off from outside this studio and go into space and fly them. You actually have to go to an airport, fly them as a normal aeroplane, land them at an airstrip, and then convert it to a car and drive.
Mm.
So, yes, there is some wonderfulness in having a car that will do that for you when you get to an airport,
mm.
but it's not what we're all imagining as being able to leave our home and, you know, just take off into space and move off.
So not next year and not the year after.
Or the year after, or the year after.
In places like Bangkok and Jakarta,
yeah.
Places where you have huge congestion problems and it takes hours even just to get from home to work.
Absolutely.
Every day. Mars Mislowski, that's all the time we have for today. But thank you so much for all those interesting insights. Businessfutures.com is where you can find them. Thank you very much, Maurice.
Pleasure as always.